Self-belief is like a muscle, but it's a muscle of the mind.
Commando mindset.
Welcome to all four of you listeners. It's good to have you along.
They're all precious to us, all four.
We love you guys.
We love you. Thanks for staying with us this far. Here we are, episode 5. We're still in the duck house. We just went for a little walk, actually, to sort of...
We did!
It lasted 5 minutes. Tomo got his feet completely drenched and we walked back. I fed a duck some pita bread. We came in and then these two were like, oh, let's have a nap and recharge ourselves.
A power nap.
Yeah, and they both fell asleep for 3 minutes, waking up thinking they were all energised and, oh my God, that was the best sleep I've had and all that stuff. Biggest amount of bullshit I've ever heard. I played one level of Angry Birds and they woke up. That's how long they were gone for.
I genuinely feel very, very revitalised.
Yeah, listen, I think I'm going to call bullshit on your timing of it being 3 minutes. We were asleep for at least sort of maybe 12, just under 15 minutes.
I did one level.
Dude, you're shit at Angry Birds. If you did one level, it took you 13 minutes.
Dudes, you're shit at sleep. Oh.
What happened?
You got too aggressive and the mic said no.
What happened there?
I don't know. Is that the one that you dropped?
No, that's your one. That was everyone.
That was everyone. I think it was probably the power.
It might be. Yeah, just don't get too enthusiastic.
Okay, so episode 5.
Cool you jets.
No, what are we talking about?
In theory, you're reckoning that we slept for 3 minutes exactly. I reckon we slept for about 12 minutes.
No, absolutely not. Terrible. Absolutely, it was about 3 minutes.
Yeah, I think what will become clear over most of this podcast is about perceptions and perception levels, and you know your perception was that.
I
and
love
our
how he's
perception
making it so
was
serious.
At
the end of the day, I feel refreshed.
I feel good.
Yeah, and I'm not having a go at you two.
For
I'm just
about
saying,
12 minutes, I slept.
And thanks for the glass of water.
You're welcome.
Didn't need the drama it took to take a glass of water to get one.
Bang bang show.
Yeah.
Layla's slowly working out the sort of
dynamic
camaraderie.
No, none of that.
Abuse.
No
abuse. Yin and yang relationship we have.
Yeah, I basically was just wanted a glass of water and these two had to compete.
Well, first off, we'll say that Layla wanted a glass of water and said one of you were going to get it.
No, I just said, can you grab? You were stood up. We were both sat down setting up kit. You were stood up and I was like, can you grab me a glass? You were stood up next to the kitchen. So I was like, can you grab me a glass of water?
Actually, he was sat down. You're both wrong. He was sat down. And you asked specifically Ben. You said, Ben, go get it. Didn't like it.
Guys, look, you're both tired. You've had very short naps. Stop talking shit.
No, you haven't.
Get on with the podcast.
I'm cool. Down? I was swearing he was closest.
No,
he was stood up. I was trying to set up the mics. No, I was like, do you mind grabbing me a glass of water? Didn't need all this drama. Listen.
Anyway, these two are well rested and we're good to go for another episode.
Today we're talking about self-belief.
It's a biggie. It is a biggie. It is the most important thing, in my opinion, about actually being able to attain what you want to attain in life.
Uh-huh. Is self-belief the right title? I'm going to start with that. Is it self-belief? Is it courage? Is it... Oh, no. Courage was kind of more with fear. Confidence. Is it... What is it?
I think there's parts of it. Like self-belief and courage, again, in that... circle of a similar sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Self-belief is that thing which takes you from not achieving your goal to achieving your goal.
Right.
It's something that you need to practice. It's something that you need to build. It's something that you need to continuously work on to grow. Self-belief is like a muscle, but it's a muscle of the mind. If you don't train that muscle, it's not going to get any bigger. Just like if you went to train biceps at the gym.
Yeah.
Or didn't go and train biceps at the gym, they wouldn't get any bigger.
Ben's been making faces, pulling his socks, and got his phone out.
Yeah.
So I would like to know what the hell is going on.
I'm just not sure that he's taking this podcast as seriously as what we'd like.
What are you doing, Ben?
Nothing.
What are you doing? Was that another level of Angry Birds?
Just tagging myself in the duck house.
For real?
Nah. No, I was looking something up as Tomo was talking, actually. But Tomo, keep talking.
Oh, he's looking up a stat?
Probably.
Something he wants to back up. Okay, I felt like there was something coming.
I think, like, self-belief is this thing that, you know, so many people, there's a common theme around inverted commas, successful people. I understand that success is a very personal journey. Best definition I've heard of success is a progressive realization towards a worthy ideal. Now, that's pretty good. Success, progressive realization of a worthy ideal.
Wow.
Pretty cool, right?
Progressive realization of a worthy deal.
Ideal.
Worthy ideal. Ah.
So whatever it is that you choose to do in your life, as long as you're working towards, i.e. mini goals to achieve the maximum goal, right? But points along the way, you need self-belief. Probably the best example of when I completely lost my self-belief was when I was medically discharged from the military. So I got the injury, which was pretty tough in itself.
Can you tell us what was the injury?
So I was about two-thirds of the way through officer training. So that was training for the second time. So I went as a commando, as a recruit at CTC, Commando Training Center. Passed that, did a couple of tours of Afghan. Off the back end of that second tour, I then went back into training to become a lieutenant, which was 64 weeks of training. That in itself is quite challenging because you're going back to day one, week one, bearing in mind you've done six years of soldiering at that point, and also you've been on two operational tours. And to sort of go down to that level again, that was pretty difficult. But you kind of believe in what you want to get at the end of it, so you do it. Two-thirds of the way through, we were on the final exercise before we did the commando tests. For the second time round, we were up on Brecon doing an exercise, walking around. Is that kind of known as yomping? Well, it is known as yomping. Yomping is like walking with heavy kit. So it's probably what, 110, 120 pounds on your back, maybe total?
Like weapons and?
Weapons, water, ammunition, rations, batteries, SIGs equipment, all these types of things. And we get towards the end of a troop attack. And I jump into a ditch and I completely invert my ankle and it just went, found out that I'd ruptured three ligaments, or ruptured two ligaments, got an avulsion fracture on the third. So I went into this rehab cycle, had surgery the following year, did more rehab. And that was basically, at this point, it was 2 years of rehab.
Gosh.
Things weren't getting better. And I still needed to finish the officer's course. I was doing a load of jobs around the camp, but obviously wasn't what I wanted to do.
Yeah,
it was just filling time. And the call was made. That's it. Mm. You're done. Your ankle's never going to get any better.
They made that call for you.
Mm-hmm.
You have to literally go in an office and listen to someone tell you that's that.
We're putting you forward for
2 years of rehab and they still cut you out?
Yeah. Medical discharge. That's it. So what happens in a medical discharge is basically you get called up and you have to attend a panel of senior naval officers. One of those naval officers is, because we're part of the Navy, although, you know, don't always like to say that, but the reality is we are.
Yeah.
Senior naval officers. One's a doctor, and basically they make the call in front of it. You have to stand to attention. You have to march in. I think you sit down.
Yeah.
Can't remember. It's a bit of a blur. And you basically get delivered formally the news that you're getting kicked out.
Dear Lord.
And that was a bit. That was a major blow.
I respect that more than getting a letter or something. Like
definitely.
I respect that it's in front of you. Do you get to? You don't get to respond. Like there's nothing.
No, you just say thank you very much, sir, mom, whoever it might be. Walk out. You then kind of have to take yourself off and try and reestablish, or think about what are you going to do on the outside. That's when the fear kicks in, because suddenly I've been a.
Was it instantaneous for you? So the second you heard that, did you feel like that was coming?
There was part of me which felt it was coming.
Yeah.
But until I actually walked out of that office, I didn't hit home.
Mm.
It was like, bang, you're going. In 6 months' time, you are out.
What do you do for the 6 months?
You attempt to set yourself up for life outside of the military.
Right.
Now, at 19 years old...
You were 19?
Well, when I was 19...
Oh, yeah.
You don't know anything.
How so old were you when you were discharged?
29?
Yeah. Still super young, really, yeah.
Still pretty young, but the best part of your life where you're learning about the corporate world and stuff like that...
Coming into a world you don't know.
Right. So it's kind of a bit of fear is mounting. Be like, yeah, you know, I'll be okay. Self-belief is high. You have to have a high degree of self-belief in the job that you do. You have to have a high degree of self-belief that I am going to make it out of here when on operations. I am going to, you know, have a successful career. I am going to pass as an officer. You have to have that element of self-belief because you almost need to, certainly in a leadership role, you need to inspire other people to have self-belief as well. On the way out, things started getting closer to the time I came out. I came out on the 10th of April. And I remember it in January. I was like, yeah, 10th of April, miles away. I got this. I'm going to be fine. February comes, like, yeah. March comes, and I'm like, shit, I'm leaving next month. Aww. I've done 200 applications to jobs.
200?
200. I've got no success. I've had, like, 3 interviews.
They helped you with that?
To a degree, but not really. I got a bit of a thing about the whole transition process, but probably not for now. And 200 applications, you know, you get to the point where you're starting to question your own ability. You're going, why are people not seeing my value? Why?
200 people tell you you're not valuable. It feels sucks.
Or they don't even pick you up, right?
Right.
Or if you're going into an interview and they tell you, sorry, you can't bring any value to this organization. And in March, you're kind of shitting it. You're like, I've got a child at home. My wife's pregnant.
Oh, I've just That's bought a house.
My son's going to be born 3 weeks after I discharge. So my second child. We're trying to move into this house. In May, bearing in mind we're leaving in April, I need to set myself up for success here. And I'm not doing it, and I'm failing, and I'm getting a little bit scared now. And the self-belief is going down. It's kind of going down in steps. You know, imagine I was at the top of the self-belief ladder.
Yeah.
I'd come down like 3/4 of the way in self-belief. It was starting to get lower and lower and lower and lower. And by the time of discharge, I still had no job, had nothing. I was like 10th of April, walking out, nothing. The pay stops. When the pay stops, that's when it really hits home. A couple of days go by and you don't really think about it. You're like, no shit, I need to do something about this. But since that time, I've put in another 50 applications.
So 250 applications
in total, 256 now. Job applications.
All of which you said no were essentially possibly just ignored. You not even said no.
Right. So at this point, I had a few more interviews. Same again. Clearly something wasn't working, but at that time I was kind of in what we spoke about, you know, in other podcasts about this survival mode. I was in survival mode now.
That's like welcome to the real world.
Yeah, and goodbye for everything that you know for the last 10 years. We move into this. The thing which really like caught me out was when we moved into the house. Now we did it like, you know, your typical survey and all these types of things. We moved into the house and in the drawer was a letter which... we didn't find until the day after we moved in. And this letter said, house condemned.
Wait, what?
House condemned. Due to a gas leak from the boiler.
The people selling it to you didn't tell you?
Yeah.
Your wife is pregnant, stood next to you. It's like, oh, well done. The house you just bought, you can't live in.
No job. Just come away from the thing I loved. Because I love being a Marine.
Oh, my Fact. God. Yeah, you wanted to stay. Wait.
So I'm thinking... how did a former Royal Marine...
did you find that piece of paper?
Yeah, we found... Yeah.
Yeah, but you personally?
Yeah, we opened the drawer and it's like, wow. Okay, what's going on here? At that point, I'm thinking, I'm a Royal Marine. Great. Or was a Royal Marine, still a Royal Marine. I went forward for officership. Somebody saw something in me somewhere to go, come along and, you know, get up the next rank. I'm a dad. I'm a husband. I now need to provide for my family, and my current results are about fuck all. And these three people are now relying on me to do something about it. That was a massive, massive moment for me. And my self-belief went from somebody who was supposed to be the pastoral carer of 30 men in a high-tempo operation to a really broken children. Individual, yeah. quite frankly. And it, for a couple of months, things got really bad because this, for example, you know, the financial pressure started building up. And there was this moment I just remember, I was like, what the fuck am I going to do? My self-belief is decreasing literally by the day. And I don't know how to change it. But what I do remember is going back to this whole values thing and going, I was once this. And one of the spirits or the ethos of the Royal Marines is the first to adapt. Sorry, the first to understand, the first to adapt and respond, and the first to overcome.
Mm.
And I remembered that ethos. And I was like, right, okay, what you're currently doing isn't working. How do you take yourself from where you are right now and where you have been for the last 6 months, achieving nothing in the corporate world? How do you get yourself out of this rut? So I lent on a little bit of courage to go, I'm struggling here. Put my hand up. I reached out to every single charity. Help for Heroes, Royal British Legion, Officers Association, SAFA, all of these types of things, and just saying, I am absolutely fucked.
Mm.
Help me. I'm trying to keep my head above water here, not just financially, but myself.
Yeah.
And my inspiration, obviously, was my family at the time. And this is kind of like where Ben and I spoke about, you know, we've spoken about this, and this is kind of, I used ice there. The inspiration was the kids. The courage was to go out and stick my hand up because the inspiration was so strong. I needed to start building my self-belief again, rebuilding my self-belief. Anyway, that was a pretty painful process. A number of different charities weren't really helping. They were like, well, we can't just give you money.
Yeah.
And at the time, because I was in survival mode, I was like, I need fucking money.
Yeah.
I need to survive. I got three mouths to feed plus my own four.
Yeah.
What do you want me to do here? Anyway, fortunately, Safaga offered a mentor.
Valuable.
Right?
Yeah.
And this is why I believe so much in coaching and mentoring. Because my mentor, Al McLeod, he stepped to the forefront. And I remember sitting in a coffee shop with him for 3.5 hours. 3.5 hours of me just pouring out everything that was wrong.
You probably needed to do that so bad.
And I got a little emotional around it.
Of course.
And I felt really low. And my self-belief was rock bottom.
And you need to do that sometimes to not your family, right? It needed to 100%. Be someone else.
100%. And over a period of about 3 months, maybe 2 months, it's quite a short amount of time because all you need is someone to show you a few of the ropes, show you a few things, grounding principles, and go. One of the most valuable exercises he ever got me to do, create this table of three columns. On the left-hand side, write down what I thought my values or my skills were in the Marines.
Mm-hmm.
Then the second column was, what does that actually mean? The third column was, what could it mean in the corporate world? And when I was able to translate that, suddenly I was like, shit, yeah, I'm pretty valuable. I've been leaning on the wrong things. I've been trying to expose. I had the Prince 2 management course. I had the APMP. I had the management of risk. I had the change management course. I was trying to focus on those, not on the experience.
Yeah.
And this is where experiences are so much more valuable than the courses and the qualifications. If you've got the qualifications, great, but you need experience with those. And within 2 months of me spending time with him, I had my first interview. That progressed to the final interview. That progressed to a job. Suddenly I was working in London as a management consultant. But during that period, I started to write down in my notepad, what do I believe myself to be? What could I be? And I believed that I was going to be working in the city with a tie and suit on, not really knowing exactly what it was going to be, but I felt it was going to be around a consultant type of thing. This was back in July. And by November, I was a management consultant in London, right?
The theme of writing something down is coming back again.
Has, yeah.
Like literally putting pen to paper.
It takes your head's just like a massive noise.
Just grab the water, Ben. He's trying to reach struggling for water there. Without making noise.
Struggling there. And it's taking the noise out of your head, putting it on paper. Then you can actually see it for what it is. And going, do I need to worry about that? No. Is that the thing I need to focus on? Probably not. But that's the thing I need to focus on. It's all about focus. So you got to take the noise out of your head and put it on paper.
Would you say that was the key thing that helped you build your self-belief up again? Was looking for it, writing it down. That was the main one.
Yeah, because I needed to remember who I was.
Yeah.
Check your flashes.
Yeah.
Check your flashes definitely was a part of that. But there was something so much deeper than that as well. It was kind of going, who am I and what am I about? And then working on that self-belief to take me from not having a job, not being able to feed my family, to...
When you went into that interview, did you fake self-belief a little bit? Or did you feel you'd regained it all by then?
No,
because
definitely
the job was part of building the self-belief, wasn't
right,
it? So
exactly.
How what level I think of self-belief did you go into that job interview with?
Because it's almost this thing like confidence, self-belief, it's kind of linked.
Yeah.
Confidence, definitely, you know, my confidence was about 50%. Self-belief probably pretty close to that as well, but as you went through it and as you did more time in the job, it was kind of I can actually do this, you know. It's going back to exposing myself to the things I have no idea about. Mm-hmm. And to be honest, I will be honest, I kind of faked it in the early days to get the job, but there's that transition period from faking it to making it, and you have to not fake it for too long, because if you fake it for too long, you'll fuck it up.
There's a thing with faking it. I think there's a lot of value in faking it, because sometimes you think you're faking it, but actually you've got it.
Mm.
But also you fake it until you've actually gained the experience that you're no longer faking it.
We were talking about this in the car yesterday, weren't we?
Yeah.
Like taking that from a business point of view, it's almost like as part of your marketing that you kind of need to look like you're bigger than you are. From the early start, that's for sure. Otherwise, no one's going to listen to you. You know, our first job was with... Can we say who they are? Are we allowed to do that?
Company X.
Yeah, Company X in the car manufacturing world. They were huge. And it was a bit of a blag to get it. Like, and there we were delivering to like this huge car manufacturer, thinking, fucking hell, how have we got in here? But you kind of just... Self-belief is part of that if we can elbow our way in, once we're in, we know we can do the job correctly.
That's it.
So there's a shared belief almost that we've got stuff that these people could probably benefit from.
Mm. Yeah, which is where that ICE model sort of stemmed from. That on reflection from that, we thought, we're in now, we've got a chance. Let's not fuck this up. Let's make use. We've bullshitted our way in, clearly. Now we're in, we know we can do the job well, so let's do the job well. And then you start to execute the plan that was originally there always from the start. So the belief in the sort of business element there for us growing a business is we believe we have what it takes. We believe we've got the content. We believe we know how to help people. But in this day and age, it's really hard to kick open the door. So you need to do something to kick open the door to get yourself in. And in the early stages... And I bet you talk to so many entrepreneurs and people in business, and I know you spoke about it as well, that to get the jobs in the early days, you need to kick the door and say, I'm this good, and I've done this, that, and this.
Exactly.
And they go, okay, cool, welcome, and you come.
It means so much to me to hear that from you guys too, because like I have bullshitted probably my way into 90% of the gigs that I've done, and that's no like overestimation. It from the sense of like, say blagging, bullshitting, faking, but faking my own self-confidence, standing there saying, oh, for sure, I'm the best person for the job. Inside, I'm not feeling that. And then you get the job and you go, holy crap, now I've got to live up to that. Wait a minute, I told them I'm X, Y, and Z. I told them I'm the bee's knees. I got to go be that now. But it always works out great.
That's the thing. That's the thing is like after it is confirmation of that self-belief. And that's this again. You know, I talked about the ladder. And I said, you know, my rungs on self-belief went down. I went down to like, you know, 25% or whatever. Every time I got the job, I move up a rung. I'm now doing well at the job. I move up to the next rung. I get a promotion. I move up to the next rung. I go and move into a different job with another promotion. I move up to the next rung. And it's kind of like climbing the ladder of self-belief.
Well, getting the job gave you a few more steps.
I, from our business point of view as well,
I think there's a big self-belief part there.
Huge. It was, we need to believe in ourselves to achieve this. When the bank job came around. Bank job, that sounds really bad. We didn't do a bank job. We did not do a bank job.
A corporate gig for a bank.
Yes. It was such a huge contract within, and we'd had the business running a year up to the point of going in through the door to do the first pitch. Yep. And then when they say, can you come back to do the second pitch? Can you come back to do the third pitch? You're kind of thinking to yourself, how many more fucking pitches do they want us to do? Why do we need to keep pitching?
Yeah.
Why do they want us to pitch? What is it? Have we missed something the first time around and they not get it? When we got to the seventh pitch, I said to Tom, I went, mate, we need to sack this off because it's clearly not going to happen.
Taking the piss seven pitches
in. Why have we got to go in for an eighth? Yeah. It was almost like, what? And then it was a bit of due diligence on our own part to say, no, maybe they're looking at it from this is big. This is a big coaching contract. You know, they're not just going to put any Tom, Dick and Harry in there on the back of one pitch. They want to know who we are. We saw the pattern that each pitch we went to, there was
their
a new
person increased in us.
Yes, and there's that. And there was a new person in the room every time on this team with them. So each time they were introducing someone new to us. We kind of looked at it and went, why are we being assessed all the time? You know, let's just get on with this work. When actually we had to jump over hurdles and through hoops for them to believe in what we were going to deliver for them. And then, you know, it comes to pilot stages, we have to deliver. And it was when it came to the pilot stage, because that was still a little bit back from the finishing line of saying yes. When it came to the pilot stage of delivering several workshops, we were like, this is our moment. You know, we've got it to this point. We've done the bits we're not really... I'm going to have to pause. There's actually a kingfisher now.
Oh my God. Every podcast, are you kidding
me? I've never seen a kingfisher. Look.
Wow.
Where is it?
Well, in the tree.
That massive orange kingfisher.
I can't see it.
Right. Graham the kingfisher. How can you not see that massive orange kingfisher? Look. On the twig.
Right hand side.
Let's
continue about self-belief while Layla tries to pinpoint.
It's good to see you, Tom.
Not that window.
The only bird out there.
I can't see
it. In the tree.
In which tree, guys?
So you see this orange, this green tree.
The willow, this green tree here.
Layla's going on a sniper's course. See the green tree there?
This one.
Yeah, the one behind it.
I want to get up and show you, but obviously I'll have to take my headphones off.
That's awesome, though.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Right, come here.
Oh, my God.
Come here. Layla.
Layla.
Come here.
Right.
Look down my finger.
Oh my God. Right. He's gorgeous. There you go.
See him now?
He's fucking tiny, to be fair.
He's fucking massive.
He's tiny. Oh,
anyway.
He's lovely. Green with orange belly.
People have switched off now.
Yeah, they're like, why
sorry. This is the Noah's Ark. Okay, so what animals have we seen now? A mouse, a duck, a dog.
Two ducks. Dog, squirrel.
Squirrel and a kingfisher.
And you're listening to Birdwatching FM.
He's gorgeous. Where were we?
Anyway, so yeah, back to the bank. And we had to do the pilots, but this was the bit we're good at, the sort of performing, delivering part of it. We got it to where we wanted. And even still, there was a little bit of, not doubt, but...
No, it wasn't doubt.
We need to get this. It was a big thing to get. And we delivered... And the entire time we were delivering was this constant belief that we are good at what we do. And I try to say that humbly in the sense of that's what we were telling ourselves. We're good at this. Let's inspire people. Let's enjoy doing it as well. And we just enjoyed the whole pilot sessions. We worked with the staff and then they gave the feedback and we got the feedback a month later and it was the highest score they've ever had on any delivery ever.
Amazing.
And we were like... Fuck, that's so cool. From a year from this point, we were both, how are we going to grow this business? How are we going to take it to where we want it to take it? And we didn't want to start this business with an idea of going, well, let's just be a small little company and we'll do a bit of coaching and it'll be a bit of a lifestyle business. We were like, we want to be in with the corporate brands. How long does it take to get in with corporate brands? 5 to 10 years. We're going to do it in two.
Yeah.
And we're like, the confidence to just be like, fuck it, we're going for it. And within a year, we had the bank.
Yeah.
3,500 people and the attention you get off the back of that with other companies to say you're delivering there,
That kind of initial
CV's badass, yeah.
Exactly, and it's the confidence and belief to say, let's do this, because what will come from this will be fucking huge.
And this is where it's like, once you get a confirmation of what you thought your self-belief was, you're like, I believe this, we believe this, he believes it, I believe it, we're going to do this. And then you get confirmation of it, your self-beliefometer goes up another notch. I think a really good way to, or a good example of self-belief is that on my second job after, which is in Bristol, we'd created the business, and in that April, bear in mind it was only April last year, we wanted to do it full time, and we didn't have any secure funds coming in at that point. We had three potential investors in, but no one was actually going for it. I believed that if I quit my job, now maybe this is, it's risky. This is
especially,
mega risk.
Especially considering how hard it was to get the jobs in the first place.
And what we were going into.
Yeah. Like,
coaching and consulting from former military.
Yeah.
Everyone's like, yeah, heard it, done it. It's, yeah, so bullshit. You know, we don't want another coaching consultant business. Fine. I believe that we can make this. I believe, he believes, we believe that we're going to get one of those investors is going to go, yeah, I'll invest in your business. I like it. Let's do it. No guarantees. I had 1 month of salary and I took the plunge. I quit my job. Within 1 month, within the next 4 to 6 weeks, we secured investment.
In 4 weeks.
So we built up to that, but there was no guarantees at any of the point when I quit my job.
I think it's worth mentioning now, like, you guys had a very strong idea, a very strong business plan that you knew. But there's also having self-belief and there's being delusional. Like, we don't want people with families to just drop their job and dive straight into
definitely not
their company that they've, invented 2 weeks ago. Like, you need to have self-belief without being delusional. You need to be sure that your company's a good idea.
That's within the smart model of goal setting, why we changed realistic, was it?
To relevant.
To relevant.
Mm.
Make it relevant to something that you should shoot for the stars, or shoot for the moon so you land in the stars. You should be doing that. But there's a degree of self-awareness when you go, what is possible and what's not possible. And we thought, I think that I found really built my belief was beginning to read and watch YouTube and look at entrepreneurs and listen to their stories and where they've come from and what they've achieved. And not just that, but spending time with the footballers and the cage fighters and high up business execs and kind of think and listening to their stories, not just how to do business, not just how to run what we're running, but where they've come from. Because that, I think, grows belief that in myself. When I look at, Warren Buffett had absolutely fuck all when he started out and became the world's richest man. Whether you love him or hate him, Steve Jobs started with nothing. He started with an idea with Wozniak and they created something. Bill Gates was the same. Elon Musk and so on and so on. And these people, I love J.K. Rowling's story. She is one who inspired me to continue writing because she was literally at rock bottom, Husband had left her. She was unemployed. They were living in council. She had her daughter. She had this idea of bringing this little guy with a jagged scar on his head to life. And she got rejection. Then she got it. And now look at her. And it's, I think with celebrity status and famous people and people who are multimillionaires and billionaires who maybe have a lifestyle that me and Tomo sort of strive for. These people have achieved it from something which kind of is relevant to who we are and what we've been through or what we were going through. Mm. And that in itself builds belief. It shouldn't be like, oh, they're famous now. Well, they're untouchable and they had a bit of luck. It's like, no, they kept plowing on. They kept plowing on. I read JK's story when I gave up writing. And it was, so I started writing this book, 25 Press Ups.
Yeah, actually, you got 50 press ups to do because you didn't do the ones after the last part.
And I'll do them.
50 press ups.
But I started writing in 2016 to just start putting my thoughts on paper. and I put a proposal together and I got an agent. So the writing process to get published is you need an agent to get published. Mm. Unless you want to self-publish, which is
a whole other ball game.
So I got an agent and loads of applications later. You know, I finally get this phone call from this lady. She was really cool. She's like, I love the book. Oh, it's amazing. I'd written the whole book, 120,000 words, which I learned later down the line is not something you do. So I wrote the whole book and she read like the first 10 pages and went, this is brilliant. Let's send this off. And it got picked up by some publishers. And I can't remember who they were. They were quite big ones. They're part of the Hachette Group. And we went along and we did these meetings and they were like, oh, we love your book. We're going to publish it. It's so cool. Blah, 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 blah. I was like, oh, awesome. Pumped. Went home from London back home. I said to my wife, I was like, they love it. Someone's going to take it. They got to take it. Out of those four publishers, someone's got to take it. This is amazing. Oh, I can't believe we're going to be famous. And we went on and on and on. And then there was no phone calls, no emails, no letters, nothing
at all.
Not even from my agent. Hmm? Yeah. It just went completely cold on me. And I was like, this is weird. I'll keep trying her. Didn't pick up.
Welcome to the industry, right?
Yeah. No, didn't pick up. No response to emails. Finally, she got back to me about 6 weeks later saying, oh, sorry, I've not been in touch. I've been going through some stuff. And I totally took that on the chin. Like, that's fine. Whatever you've been going through, you're going through. But have you got an answer? I'll get back to you. So I ended up ringing one of the publishers directly, rang the editor who I had a meeting with. And I was like, hiya. Oh, this kicked me in the nuts as well, right? So I rung up. And I was like, hey, it's Ben. Remember me from the meeting a few weeks ago? And she's like, oh, Ben, hi, how's it going? Yeah, just to keep you in the loop, we're just putting the advance together now. And we'll be going through the process of publishing the book. I was like, oh, my God, that's amazing. Thank you. And she said, have you spoke to Rob yet? And I was like, who's Rob? Rob, your agent. And like my agent was a lady. And I was like,
no.
She went, sorry, who's this? I mean, it's Ben Williams with the book Commander Mindset. And she went, oh.
Oh, no, that didn't happen. Ben, that happened?
Yeah, and I was
like,
is that
a true story?
Yeah.
Jen?
Also, it's a true. I was like, no, she went all weird on the phone. She's like, oh.
What a stupid woman.
Hi, Ben, how are you? And I was like.
The voice, the tone, everything.
Yeah, everything. And I knew straight away. And I was actually at a soft play with the family. And I was sat with my wife, Nat. I was like, I'm going to go and fucking ring him. And I was in this cafe on my own behind these closed doors and literally my heart sunk because I had everything pinned on this. I thought it was going to be it. And she went, oh, yeah, so sorry. I won't mention her name, the agent, but she was meant to be in touch with you. Yeah, we're not taking your book any further forward.
Oh, Christ.
And it was so... I've not told you that, have I?
No.
It was such a kick in the teeth. And I went back and I literally closed the laptop. And that was
really?
It. Yeah, just put it down for like a year and a half. Couldn't be asked. I actually started writing a bit of fiction just because I enjoyed writing and it helped, but I didn't do anything with it. And then we were talking and when we first sort of got together.
Mm. That sounds weird.
Yeah. Swipe left, swipe
left.
It is
a weird relationship.
Yeah.
He ignored me on LinkedIn for about 4 months.
Yeah.
I was like, hi, mate. Hi, how are you? You
that's because you sounded like that.
Well, yeah. Fair enough, but did try and reach out to you. Rude.
Anyway, once I finally decided to talk to Tomo, he kind of mentioned it. He's like, oh, you thought about carrying on writing your book? And I was like, yeah, I might do. And then my wife was like...
You're such a support guy for him, huh? All these stories.
Hey.
He really does support you big
time. He's good. He's the one that does it, though.
Fist bump.
We just fist bumped.
And then my wife, Natalie, was like, you should really try putting this book out. You've worked so hard on it. And like, oh, yeah, I'll give it another go. And then just by chance, I read this JK story about how she got her publisher. I was like, oh, fuck it. I'm going to go and give it another go. I bought the Artist Writers and something yearbook 2018, which has every agent and every publisher in it. And I just went through and just emailed everyone.
Good man.
And so to the point of getting to that final agent, which is Nick now, who I'm with at David Luxton's, was 96
you
attempts.
See, that's really important because so many people like wannabe presenters sometimes message me and go like, oh, how do you apply for this job? And I'm like, I probably message about 600 people. Like, I've sent my reel to thousands of people and I knock on every door and it's like, oh, I asked for it. Like, I went and knocked on the door.
Yeah.
So there's two things that you're touching on there. One is you picking, getting self-belief from the people around you and the stories of others failing and then succeeding and seeing you're not the only one. But also in your story, you kind of gathered self-belief from the little steps. Like when you talk about goals earlier on in another podcast, we discussed goals. You talked about having those mini goals each the way and each little achievement will help bring you self-belief. So you've got those two things there. So set yourself small goals, grow there and give yourself extra self-belief. Look at stories of others that relate to you and see that you're not the only one.
I love other people's stories because it gives me courage.
Massively.
And it really helps my belief and confidence that if they can do it, I can do it. Because we're all human beings. We're all born as two, like we said earlier in the last episode, we're born with two fears.
Yeah.
So everyone's the same. We all start on the same level playing ground. It's what you choose to do. And you know, from that 96 worth of rejections and Nick finally took me on and then we landed Penguin Business and my editor was Simon Sinek's editor, and the reason I got into writing was because of Simon Sinek. It was like, this was all worth it. Not only have we got to this point, but we got to the point which I wanted to be at. And, you know, this belief and confidence comes from people like Tomo and my wife who say, keep going, keep going, keep going. And that's what we should all have.
I'll debate the fact we all start on a level playing field.
I was about to say, first world.
However, if you want to start a business now, everyone starts with zero Twitter followers. Everyone starts with zero Instagram followers. Every website starts out of that. That's a fair playing field that's opening up to someone's new business. And for the first time, you know, we're living in an era where you can put your product out in front of hundreds and thousands of people on your own. And that's what an opportunity. How can we not milk that and make the most of that? I want to go back to self-belief and how people listening can build that self-belief.
I think it just goes back to this. You have to do the little things. Okay, so how I've built self-belief is attempting the small things which I thought were a little bit out of my reach.
Yes.
Okay, so it's the little things. For example, maybe I remember wanting a six pack. Right? Weirdly.
Okay.
Okay. Weirdly.
Where is this going?
I'm still trying, eh? sarcasm, lowest form of wit.
Absolutely. And I remember being like, I never thought I could do it as a kid because the environment around me, everyone was like, yeah, fatty, fat boy, you know, fatster. You know, I used to get massively bullied at school. But that was a whole separate issue. The environment piece was never set to, like, get my six pack.
Yeah.
So when I started going, well, it's up to me to get my six pack. It used to be out of reach. I bet if I could get a six pack, I wonder what else I could do.
Of course.
So I started training, you know, four times a week. I started eating the right things. I didn't have the education. I think education is a big part of it,
of understanding the
miniature parts of self-belief. You have to know stuff to get better at things. So I started pushing my boundaries and going, I think I can achieve a six pack. I did achieve a six pack. Since let it go.
but you got there. That's all that matters.
I got there, right?
Yeah.
And so I was like, right, okay, I'm really happy. I'm, I've got that now. Self-belief not went up a notch. And then it's try something else that is a little bit out of reach, but probably attainable, given enough of a tenacious attitude to get it. And now it's things that, you know, it sounds probably ludicrous, but this is how I genuinely feel about self-belief now, is that it's so strong within you. This muscle is so strong within you now, well, within me. And Ben feels it as well, I know, but he's got his own version of it. But it's almost you can kind of will things into...
big. Yeah.
Not reality, because, you know, you manifest your thoughts.
Bolstering onto that, I think that's absolutely true as well, in the sense of you will it to happen. But to will it to happen, you've got to ask for it to happen, if that makes sense. So when the business we've got, literally, I have to pinch myself sometimes to be like, how the fuck do we work with these people? We used to be a right pair of numbskulls. And now we're working with some of the biggest brands in the world and our business is going global. And it's, I think we were numbskulls. We are a little bit still now, as you can tell through this podcast.
I feel like
but
I'm
we
in
also
an episode of Saved by the Bell.
Yeah, well, there we go. Skeeter. Bringing it back.
Numbskull.
But with that, is don't be afraid to ask.
Yeah.
Don't be afraid to ask people. Don't be afraid to ask businesses. Just knock on the door and ask, what is the worst that's going to happen? That's what we've done. And I think this kind of courage for me, and I know it has for you as well, has come from the battlefield. You know, when you've almost died, fuck it. What's the worst that's going to happen? Hey, can I have this contract? No. Okay, next door, next door, yeah. next door. You know, it's things like that that people will say yes. Lots of people will say no. Lots of people will give you 250 rejections. Lots of people will turn you away 96 times with your book. 600 presenting applications. It's going to happen. People are going to say no. But someone's going to say yes. And that one person, those two people which say yes, that one business which says yes, that one opportunity that comes around grows that belief because you go, I worked hard to get this.
Yeah.
I achieved this. We've got it. Let's go. Let's go. Let's do it again. And that's where this belief comes from. And you've got to accept that setbacks are coming. You've got to accept that you're going to fall flat on your fucking face. Pick yourself up and go again. Pick yourself up and go again. Because when it happens, that's when you tell yourself, look how much shit I got through. And now we're here. And it all comes back to, you've got to mind how you talk to yourself as well. I won't. I can't. I can't be bothered. I'm lazy. I lack belief. All this type of stuff. Oh, it might not happen. I wish. All that type of stuff.
Even just saying, I'm not confident enough.
Just be strong.
It's like you're just telling yourself that. Just
internal dialogue is absolutely key to this.
Yeah, and it's that part where, as Royal Marines, one of our values is humility. So it's not always good to gob off and say how good you are. But in your head, you can be as arrogant and as confident as you fucking want. I am going to do this. I'm going to smash this. I am going to fucking kick this ass. Why not? No one's hearing you and you're simply talking to yourself. Be as arrogant, as confident as possible. And then on the outside, at the exterior, check your ego, have humility and go and do it.
I think a really good way for people that obviously don't go through 32 weeks of training, don't go to war. How do we increase our self-belief? You have to almost attach you have to create a big goal. Because once you achieve that big goal, you then get the self-belief. If you've always believed in yourself, a real simple one, if you believe in yourself, I could never, ever climb Mount Snowdon, which is a reasonable mountain, okay? And then you go, no. I reckon I could probably do Mount Snowdon.
Yeah.
Then you try it. You may not get up the first time, but you keep doing it. And then once you get to the point, the top, you've completed Mount Snowdon. Therefore, you're now looking back on yourself and going, I believed I could do it.
So something you guys are touching on a lot is the reflection, right? Like, I'm sure every listener, despite any kind of self-confidence issues, could look back and see something they've done before that they're proud of. And the way you guys reflect on checking your flashes and reminding yourself of stuff you've done before, like look at something you've done before that you're proud of and remind yourself of how far you went to that and what you did and how awesome you are.
It's really important you said that because it's something we didn't do for about a year ourselves within the business. And we got work with people we never thought we could get work with. We secured investment for certain reasons that we needed within the business to do something with. We met at Gareth Southgate's Savoy.
Yes, we did, the Football Writers Awards, yeah.
Where we delivered a speech. Like,
you delivered a speech about Gareth Southgate. You were sat next to Gary Lineker and it's like pinch me moment.
Madness. Yeah. Madness. But we never reflected on anything like that. It was just like, yeah, done, on to the next, done, on to the next, done, on to the next.
It's important to take that time.
Exactly. And I think we got to like summer and we were burnt out. Like we'd just accelerated.
Like,
yeah. And we just burnt out and we were like, need at least a week off here, tired. We hadn't reflected. And then I think we got together, didn't we? Everything happens over booze with us. And we sat down, we had a beer, and it was just like a clink of the glasses. We realised at that point that we hadn't celebrated any of the small wins.
Same.
We'd just gone, yeah, got that, next, got that. Never sat down and went, hey, mate, cheers. We fucking smashed it.
Because
that exactly in itself grows belief and confidence where we were sitting there going, I feel really burnt out. Why do I feel so burnt out? I feel tired. Are we doing the right thing? That actually when we took that sort of pause moment and reflected and went, Oh, mate, have you seen? It was over a beer when we were putting a PowerPoint together. That was it. And we were putting logos on who we worked with. And we were like, Jesus, we spoke.
The visual moment happened.
Yeah, it was suddenly happened. We're like, oh my God, we've worked with these people. I forgot about that. Do you remember?
I'm talking about.
Bang, bang, bang. And all these logos came up. And it was like, hey, mate, we had beer and we enjoyed it. And we took the foot off the gas for the first time and went, look what we've achieved.
Yeah.
And that grew belief, that grew confidence. It didn't grow ego or arrogance. It just went, mate, look how capable we are. If we can do this within 6 months, fuck knows where we could be in 3 years.
About a year ago, I had like exact same thing where I was just not enjoying my job and burnt out and tired. And it was because I wasn't enjoying my job. I was looking at the next job. And then I remember I sat down editing my showreel. So for me, it's very visual, right? Mm. And I was looking at my showreel going, oh my God, I've had the best year. Like, this is ridiculous. Idris Elba's introducing me. And I was like, why didn't I love this?
Idris Elba.
Bro. I did the FIFA Best Awards. I interviewed Neymar, Messi, and Cristiano Ronaldo in one row. And Idris Elba introduced me onto the stage. So my showreel opens with Idris Elba says, you know, I am now Brazilian, brilliant presenter, blah, blah, blah.
Well gel.
Her name is Leila Radley. Yeah, yeah. Go look at my showreels on YouTube. So I was like, I wanted to retire. I was like, that's it.
Sorry.
And do you know what? I wasn't expecting it. So I was on the... in the arena, like with the footballers around me about to interview them. And I heard and I saw, because I saw Idris Elba, I knew someone's going to throw to me at some point. But I didn't know he was going to do this big old fat introduction to Leila Ranali. And as soon as he said it, I remember thinking, oh, I'm going to use that in my showreel.
What's really key about that reflection as well is that we were probably all in the same point of burnout because we were looking, what's next, what's next, what's next? Because we were
because
all
we
on
were
our...
scared of we're,
yeah.
not...
Yeah. What if we don't get it? I've got to feed my children. We always think of that inspiration again, you know, fucking hell, I need to get next week. I need to get that job. I need to get this because my inspiration is still at home. But actually, all three of us in our own little ways have got to where we really wanted to be and got to great places. And what we'd achieved could take us far further.
Do you know what I did?
Go
as
on.
Soon as I finished editing that showreel, I went, I'm taking time off. Like, I'm all right. And I took a ton of time off.
Literally just took the words out of my mouth because you realised you were no longer in survival mode.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
Yeah. We realised we were no longer in survival mode. It's not all like, and that's a mental switch. That's a mental change. But you can only get to that point when you reflect on what you've achieved.
It doesn't mean you rest on your laurels.
No, but it
was a key point for all of us to go.
A step change.
I've made it.
Yeah.
For this part.
Give yourself a pat on the back.
Yes.
Like, yo.
Relax.
That was awesome. So,
and then we go again.
Because we actually had a... just
off phases. Sorry to butt in, but we call it phases, didn't we?
Yeah.
So phase one's done. Phase two, phase three.
And when you finish phase one, enjoy it. Celebrate. Tell yourself well done.
Yeah, exactly.
Take that time. Then go for phase two.
Because we at the back end of last year, probably just at the back end of last year, summer last year, we went to one of the major consulting firms in the UK. And probably the world, actually. And we met a guy who was achieving amazing, amazing things. But, like, we saw him a few weeks later. He had a stroke.
Oh, no.
Because
stress.
He was burning himself out. Because he was
that,
like, I must do
you
this.
You hear
I
so
must
many stories
this.
About millionaires not happy, right? Like, having everything but not being happy at the same time. I mean, that can be obviously complex and for very many different reasons, but a lot of the time it's like we workaholics. I'm a workaholic. I love working,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
I have to force myself to stop, slow down and go, yeah, this is cool. I like it. I have to slow down to enjoy it.
This go on.
Okay, I was going to say, and one of the things that I think is really, really important for people to do is, you know, you hear so many people talk about this purpose, you know, what's my purpose? What's my purpose? And I was speaking to someone about purpose. And I said, okay, so let's switch up the word purpose for contribution. What's your contribution? And they were like,
wording changes everything.
Right?
Perspective.
We'll talk about language. We'll talk about that later. But it's so important to just switch a few things up. If someone hears something from a different angle and then they recognize when they go, I've just realized that I didn't really understand what purpose meant, but now that you've said contribution,
it's changed from a selfish to an unselfish place as well.
Exactly. And people go, shit, I've contributed so much.
Yeah.
I'm so pleased. I'm so happy. I'm no longer in survival mode. I'm actually contributing. I'm doing all of these things which actually makes me feel good. All the pleasure chemicals. all these types of things.
We were talking about language earlier. I love them. There's a book called The Last Lecture. Damn, I wish I could remember his name, the author. But it's called The Last Lecture. And he was an Imagineer at Disney, and he focused on the language that Disney was using and where the parks of Disneyland parks were saying, like, open at 7 a.m., closes at 10 p.m. or whatever. He changed all the languages at the sign because he didn't like the idea of Disneyland closing. And he changed the language to opens until. So you never actually said the park was closed. Do you know what I mean? It opens until this time. And he said how big an effect that had on people arriving, because you don't arrive, look at the sign, it's like, oh, it closes at this time. Yeah. You're like, oh, it's open until that time. Because then you rush, don't you?
It almost becomes finite. Like, exactly. Oh, the end of the day is this time away. The end of the day, oh, it's getting an hour nearer. It's getting an hour nearer. We should get some more rides and rush, 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 rush. Life's like that.
I noticed I was with a footballer, an elite footballer, and I saw, in fact, I saw his phone and his mate's phone, who's also from another club but a top footballer as well, and they both had pictures of themselves on their screen, right? Both of them had pictures of themselves winning, one of them at the Olympics and one of them, I can't remember what it was, a magazine paper or something, but it was him looking amazing, playing football. And I thought, oh, in my world, that's kind of like narcissistic. Like, if my friend had a picture of herself on her phone, I would have been like, oh, look at you, you know, like, whereas for them, it seems totally normal.
Arrogant.
Right. And then I went to someone else, another, it was a fighter, and he had a picture of himself on his phone. And I was like, there's a pattern here.
Something in
and
this.
Then I interviewed Neymar, and on his phone, a picture of himself. And I was like, fuck, I'm getting on this. I mean, screw that. I'm putting a picture of myself on my phone, because I was like, that helps me. Like, you look at your phone however many times a day, like loads. So it's really important that it's giving you the right feeling when you look at your phone. And I look at my phone. I've got a picture of me and Dan Hardy on my phone. Me looking badass. Good and it's photo. Like a, it's a good photo. And it's a basically a promo for Cage Warriors. And when I look at that photo, I feel proud. Mm. And it helps me sell myself, if that makes sense. Mm.
To yourself, strangely.
To myself.
Yeah.
100%. Because yeah. I have like the self-belief. It's a selfish thing, right? I need to have self-belief.
So that's part of self-belief. It's almost being able to not have these visual aids and seeing it in here first.
Yeah.
Do you know?
That's harder.
That's hard as shit.
Yeah.
It really is difficult. But you work on that more and suddenly, like, you know, I can't remember which famous motivational speaker said it, but, you know, he would complain about how so many people would talk to him and say, oh, I need to see it before I believe it. And he was like, no.
You have to believe it to see it.
To see it.
Obviously.
Mic drop.
That's from a distance. Thank you very much. Goodbye.
Ciao. Thomas done. The best is out. 100%. I want to know if we have homework. Because, like, for me, I'm immediately... things changed when I sort of got rid of a load of people I was following on social media. Because it's like, these people don't make me feel good. It doesn't, I don't like it. And that's ruining, fucking up with my confidence. So on Instagram, especially. So look at your social media, because when you talk about like your five friends around you, who do you surround yourself with? Are you being inspired? Like, look how much time we're spending on our phones. That's a friend. That's a real major influence into our lives right now. And if you're looking at your phone, you know, 30, 40 times a day, and you're looking at a bad thing or something that makes you feel low or disses your confidence, that's a problem you have to change. Just have to change it. What other homework do we have? Do we have homework?
I think it's quite simple homework this week, and it's just exercising your belief a bit more and understanding what drives your belief. So this week, we would like you to identify one point in your life where you failed at something, and try to link the fact, was it because you did not believe in yourself? We'd also like you to look at something where you succeeded and ask yourself, what was your belief like for that as well? And try and understand, did I fail at something because I just truly didn't believe in myself, or did I pass? Did I succeed because deep within me I knew I could achieve this? So it's just a simple reflection this week. Ask yourself one thing you failed and why, and how it was linked to your belief. Write it down
in your notepad.
It's getting full, this notepad.
And then second is identify one, we don't need loads, one moment of great success within your life and how deeply you believed in yourself to achieve that, and reflect.
And did you celebrate it?
And celebrate it.
And now we've got a woodpecker at the
door. Are you kidding?
come off it.
We're going to leave you now and we're going to go and join our woodland friends down by the water and we'll be back next week.
It's going to take me 25 minutes to find the woodpecker.
Do you remember in the 90s there was this thing called Animals of Farthing Wood?
Yes.
I feel like that's what we're in.
That's where we are. I feel like Snow White.
Yep.
Yeah, after both your 3 minutes sleep, I don't think either of you look like any of those woodland characters.
20-second nap?
Let's do it.
Commando Mindset.